Welcome to The Book Show. Ann Patchett has a gift for turning quiet moments into unforgettable drama. In her new novel, Whistler, A Chance Encounter at the Met, reconnects a woman with her stepfather who disappeared from her childhood years earlier. What follows is a tender, haunting story about memory, regret, and the emotional echoes people leave behind. Ann Patchett is next on The Book Show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Ann Patchett has become one of the defining literary voices of her generation. The author of Bel Canto, Commonwealth, The Dutch House, and Tom Lake is known for writing deeply human stories about family, memory, friendship, and the surprising turns that shape a life. Beyond her fiction, she's also the owner of Nashville's celebrated independent bookstore, Parnassus Books. Her new novel, Whistler, begins with a chance meeting at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Daphne Fuller unexpectedly encounters Eddie Triplett, the former stepfather who vanished from her life decades earlier. Their reunion reopens memories of a childhood tragedy and a relationship that quietly transformed them both. The latest novel is Whistler, which explores grief, coincidence, and the lingering pull of the past. It is a great honor to welcome Ann Patchett back to The Book Show.
Thank you, Joe, having you on the show. I love being on the show. And I always think, God, how am I going to live up to that introduction? Wow.
The new book is Whistler, and it is a doozy. It is an absolutely gorgeous novel. Give me a sense of how you came to this particular idea of a family dynamic that you wanted to explore.
Well, the way I came to it is the book is dedicated to my friend Jim Fox. And Jim Fox died just 2 years ago on his 85th birthday, one of the best friends I ever had in my life. And after he died, I just thought, you know, this is so much love he had for me, so much love I had for him. What if I could take not the story, but the love, make up a story, and then pour all of that into a book? And that's what I did. And it was like holding on to a golden thread. It was such a happy book for me to write. It's funny when people say, oh, this is a book about grief. And I think, oh, this was just a book about joy for me and love. But who knows, maybe years later, I'll look back and see it's about grief.
Well, grief in the sense that there is an incident that takes place, and the grief I would think is of time lost, right? Of time lost with this person that, yes, could have been a joyful exercise.
Yeah, but you get what you get. And I think that Daphne and Eddie are so thrilled to have found one another, and they're not going to waste a minute. I don't feel like they're sitting around feeling bad that they didn't have that time together, because they are together now and they are so happy about it.
I guess it's just the way we are attuned as readers of fiction sometimes, that we expect that there is going to be some sort of explosion in this relationship between these two. And what I felt just to be beautiful is that it only gets stronger and more beautiful. And we realize, as time goes on, of just how strong and beautiful it was from the very beginning.
Yes. A lot of people have said to me that they read this book at the beginning, kind of holding their breath, thinking something very creepy must have happened in the woods. Something really awful must have happened. And because in literature, when you run into your former stepfather who was banished from your family, it kind of implies that maybe there was something creepy coming. But in fact, no creep. I hope that's not a spoiler. No creep.
No, I think that's a selling point. That's not a spoiler.
Right.
What the other thing too is that we get to know these characters. We get to know Eddie and we get to know Daphne. And we realize sort of the outside forces, which includes Daphne's mother and Eddie's ex-wife. and what a role she plays in this and in everyone's kind of understanding or lack of understanding as to what happened when suddenly they're together, an accident happens, and then they're not.
Right. And one of the things that I loved writing in this book is Abigail. Abigail's the mother. Abigail's relationship with her daughter, Daphne. Because when the book starts, it's not a great relationship. It's not a horrible relationship, but it's not good. They're not close. They've never been close since the divorce when Daphne was 9. Their relationship has a real arc in the story. And over time, I think that Daphne realizes that she has been looking at her mother as if she, Daphne, were still 9. She's judged her as a child and she's stuck by that judgment all her life. And over the course of the story, I think that Daphne begins to understand things from her mother's point of view, and she winds up having more compassion for her mother.
And not only compassion toward her mother, but even a better understanding for her own father, right?
Exactly. And parallels between her father, Buddy Zabriskie, and Eddie Triplett, her stepfather. What she comes to see is that in a very weird way, her mother made the same mistake twice.
Was the sort of the guiding force that it's going to be the relationship between Daphne and Eddie, or was it something larger overall that you were looking to explore in a whole?
It was the relationship of Daphne and Eddie. You know, I'm not a writer who thinks, all right, this is going to be the theme, and this is going to be the moral, and this is going to be the larger point. It's that I start with the characters and their relationship. And like every relationship, there is something larger than the two people involved. But that really happens very organically. You know, these are the two people. This is their story. These are their feelings. Now they're going to spend time together. And if a larger point emerges, then I'm very grateful.
Does the larger point become apparent to you?
Yes. And I think for me, it's that if a person has one person in their life, hopefully as a child, but one person in their life who really sees them for who they are and loves them and accepts them, it can be a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, a teacher, a neighbor, a friend, whatever. If it's one person who knows you and accepts you at any point in your life, chances are your life is going to be a lot better. And for Daphne, Eddie was that person. So even though her childhood and her sister's childhood was very chaotic, she grew up to be a well-adjusted, happy person. And I think it was because she had Eddie's love.
Ann Patchett is our guest on this week's book show. The new novel is Whistler. There is a horse on the cover of the book. Whistler is a story, if you will, a story within a story. Give me a sense of the genesis of that, of making that not only the title, but kind of a centerpiece of this novel.
So not only is the novel named for the horse is on the cover. There is an especially beautiful painting of a horse on the cover that my friend Noah Satterstrom painted for me. He painted the cover of the Dutch House as well.
Mm.
And you have to read really far into this book thinking, well, why is there a horse on the cover?
What in the guilty world? As charged, yes.
What does this have to do with a horse? This is a really urban New York novel, kind of a love letter to New York City. Why is there a horse? And a horse like out in the West somewhere. Eddie tells Daphne at one point when she's a child the story of this horse. The horse is in the book. That story is maybe 15 pages, and the horse is probably in there for 3 pages. But the horse is the symbol of loyalty and love and return. And for both Eddie and Daphne, they lost each other, but they both always held on to the horse. In fact, all these years, Eddie kept a picture of this horse on his desk. And so when they find each other and they start talking about it, they realize that the horse, that story of the horse, is kind of what they held on to.
One of the things I also noted is that both Eddie and Daphne's husband, Jonathan, even and other characters, are nice men. That seems to be often more and more a rarity in fiction these days.
So here's the thing, and it's nice men, but it's also nice people who actually love each other and are kind to each other. So you can see men from a distance. You can see men on television, or you can see men on social media or whatever in the news, and you just think, ah, oh, there are no nice men. But in my life, every day, I wake up with my very nice husband. I walk my dog. I see my nice neighbors. We talk. I go to work at the bookstore. Really nice men working at the bookstore, customers coming in. So, what I see in my life are a lot of really, really great guys, and they're not well represented in fiction. And one of the things that I always want to do in fiction is to represent what I see. I know there are horrible things going on in the world, but they are secondary sources. They are not primary sources. They're not what I'm encountering in my life. But I actually get cards all the time from men saying, "Thank you so much for having nice men in your books."
Agreed. And but you also make the point too, especially when you're writing about the publishing world, that it certainly wasn't easy for women in that setting, and a lot of it had to do with the men who worked there.
What I say in the publishing, then that's maybe like a sentence, the men got more money.
Right.
And
Well, that's my point. Meaning that you can sort of you don't completely dismiss it. It is mentioned that the obvious, right? That is often the case.
yeah, it is often the case, and especially in the 90s or wherever this is setting out in publishing. The men were promoted more easily and the men made more money. That doesn't actually imply that the men were bad, but there is a hierarchical system that's been in place not only in my life, but throughout human history.
Sure.
And to take this as my opportunity to rage against something that's always been in place, yeah, I just feel like that's been covered. I feel like that's
Right.
been covered.
And does the industry, the publishing industry, fascinate you?
Yes, it does. Business fascinates me. I didn't realize it until I opened a bookstore. And I am interested in every piece. I'm interested in the covers. I'm interested in shipping and reprints and marketing and all of these pieces because they all intersect in my life. There's a young woman who works at our bookstore, Lindsay Lynch. And she published a terrific novel 2 years ago called Do Tell. And she's our book buyer at the
Yes.
store, right? So she got several offers for the book and she talked to the different editors. But the thing that swayed her decision about which publishing house to go to was based on how they fulfilled their orders at the store. Some publishing houses, you can say, "Hey, we're out of this book." And they get you that book in 2 days. Others, they get you that book in 6 weeks. Some call you back, some don't call you back. And that was what she was operating on when she decided who she wanted to publish Do Tell. Doubleday won the day. But that is fascinating. And that is something that I imagine less than 1%, much less than 1% of the people signing publishing deals have that information.
When you think of your career and the books that you have put out, there are many authors who are quite dissatisfied with that process. But you seem to be at a place where you're okay. This is good.
It would be really lousy of me to complain about my career. I am very well treated. I'm very well published. And I will also say, I am so struck by the fact of how hard I work. Now, I'm not talking about as a writer. I work hard as a writer. I work the way everybody else works as a writer. But I mean, after the book is done. We got finished copies of this book on May 6th. Between May 6th and May 31st, I signed 15,000 hardback books in four states. That's before the book comes out and before I go on tour. Before that, I signed 25,000 tip sheets that they sew into other books that go out all over the country. I've done all the interviews, I've written all of the pieces. You know, the extent to which when I was young, I thought, oh, it's like buying a lottery ticket. You know, I'll write a book, and if it's good and people like it, maybe it'll become a bestseller. And now I think maybe if I go down in my basement and sign until I'm a little pile of dust. I mean, it's literally like Rumpelstiltskin going downstairs to spin straw into gold. And another thing I never understood, and I'm really torn about that because part of me thinks this is an insane waste of time. And part of me thinks I am the luckiest human being in the world that I get to do this.
Why do you think it's important for readers to have a book that you have signed?
I don't think it's important for readers to have a book that I have signed. My name in ink in the front does not make it a better book in any way. However, I own a bookstore. And the saying goes, a signed book is a sold book. And so people who come into my bookstore, they want a signed book. It's a special thing. And then also, I'm signing cartons of books that are going out to little independent bookstores all over the country that I'll never get to. But people will go into those little stores in Indianapolis and New Mexico and Montana, and there's a signed Ann Patchett first edition. And it feels special. I remember in my own bookstore, I once bought a copy of Sophia Loren's memoir, which I had no interest in whatsoever. But it was signed. And I was like, it's Sophia Loren. It's signed. I've got to buy this. So I get it.
Did you read it?
No. Any other questions?
Is it because the only thing I will push back gently on is that I know I have an order in your store for a copy an inscribed copy and I but because I'm talking to you I like that sense of having that connection with you. Because I have spent this time reading this novel, I have become so ingrained and involved in it. It has stayed with me for weeks, and I just feel that it's almost mean to just cut off that relationship.
Well, and it's really wonderful. And I really see it when I go in the morning and I sign the special orders. And it matters to people, and I want to do it.
Give me a sense about the bookstore of how that seems to be an important part of what you do and the hard work that you mentioned. Douglas Stewart was a guest on this show, but also was with you recently talking about his new book,
Amazing.
John of John, which is
Amazing.
stunning,
Brilliant.
absolutely stunning. And the But he wrote on his Instagram that calling you the greatest advocate for books, that is a role, whether you want it or not, that is a role that you have taken on for authors and readers and the thousands of people that go to those videos every week to see what Ann Patchett has to say about the new books that are coming out.
Yeah, I fell into this. It was not a plan, and it has evolved slowly over time. And this is not who I was before I opened a bookstore. This is not where I thought my life was going. I'm now talking about book banning and First Amendment rights and always shopping local and supporting the indies, and be sure you buy a book by a debut author, and all of these things. I didn't mean to do this, but it's a really good thing, and it's an important platform. And for whatever reason, the job is mine, and I will continue to stand up and hold up books. I just gave a TED talk. It's not up yet, but I went to the TED Festival, and I got to give a talk, and the whole thing was, it was complicated and exhausting, and the buildup for it is like 6 months long, and I kept thinking, why in the world did I agree to do this? Because I got to stand up and hold up books and say, it's really important that you read. And if you want to live in a society where people read books instead of scrolling on their phones all day, then you have to read a book. You can't just read books to your kids. Your kids have to see you reading books. And I thought, well, hell, if I get a chance to say these things that I really believe, then I need to take that opportunity.
When you look at the again in sort of that advocate role, I assume that even with your own books that there were advocates along the way, and that always independents were very important to your career.
Yes, absolutely. And there are moments that I think, maybe I don't have to go on book tour anymore. Maybe I don't have to sleep in a hotel and get on a plane every day after day after day. And the reason that I keep doing it is because that's how independent bookstores make a hit of money. I know that from both sides. I used to go to bookstores and people would say to me, thank you so much for coming to our bookstore. And I swear to you, I had no idea what they were talking about. I thought they were just doing me a huge favor. But when Douglas Stewart comes to Parnassus, he is making us a ton of money. Virginia Evans on her way to Parnassus to make us a ton of money. And that's how we pay the rent, and that's how we give good health insurance to our employees. And so I want to be part of that ecosystem. I want to go out and repay the debt that I have to independent bookstores by making them some money.
One of the segments that you did was with George Saunders, and I watched that some time ago, but I love that you include in this novel about the Bardo, and even to the point where it touches on his new novel, Vigil, where there's an advocate for you as you die, and someone that is with you and as you do that crossing. And
yeah,
that struck me.
You want to know something amazing? George Saunders and I have the same birthday.
That is amazing.
It's amazing. George is, there's just nobody that I admire more than George. I love who he is as a person. I love what he stands for, which is a highly developed, highly intelligent sense of peace and compassion. And I want to be George Saunders' little sister.
Final question. It's not really a question. It's a thank you, because again, you do this segment on Friday where if you haven't read it, it's new to you. And I would be fascinated to talk to you about how you choose those, but it is, it's always an interesting exercise, and like anything, some things I'm really want to read, and other things I'm like, okay, well, we'll see how that works out. The one that really got me was The English Understand Wool.
Yeah.
Helen
right?
DeWitt. You refer to it as like this little golden book, but my God, is that good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I went to Three Lives in the West Village in New York City. I said, what are you selling tons of? They said, The English Understand Wool. I said, I've never heard of it before. I took it home. I read it. I did a video. The funny thing about those videos is sometimes they just catch fire. And that book sold out everywhere in the
yeah.
country. A couple nights later, I'm making dinner in my kitchen, listening to NPR, and there is a piece on the radio about the English Understand Wool, about my video. They play my soundbite. They didn't call me. I had no idea. And they have the author on saying, "Wow, I never knew Ann Patchett." You know, and I just thought, life is really
Yeah.
strange. But
Well,
what a gift to be able to hold up a book that people will miss and say, "This book, this book."
I say this with all due respect, but I mean, sometimes when NPR takes those clips, I mean, you have to keep in mind they're weaselly.
Sure, of course. You know the other book that just exploded? Swimming Studies,
Yes.
Leanne Chapton.
Yes.
Fabulous. It had gone out of print. It had just come back in print. And I think we sold like 600 copies of Swimming Studies.
And that's exciting because it's something that's not on the radar, and suddenly it is.
It's exciting because it's religion, you know? It's like,
Right.
this is the love in my heart, and I want to share it with you.
I will end this conversation by saying I think I've said this to you. I know when we were talking about Tom Lake and our shared love for Our Town, but this novel just has such a beautiful ending. And I often find endings problematic, but this is just a perfect, gorgeous, beautiful ending.
Thank you. And I want to say thank Kate DiCamillo, who read the book and said, "No, it doesn't end there. It has to end there." And I said, "Oh, I hadn't thought about that." And I went back and I wrote that ending. And everyone has said, "Oh, the ending." And I'm like, "Yeah, thank you, Kate DiCamillo.
Well, she's, yeah.
She's good, man.
No
She's
slouch yourself, no.
And you know what? She did the same thing for The Dutch House and for Tom Lake.
Oh, that's great.
She has no comments for the whole book. And then she's like, "Oh, yeah, they just have to move the piano from the dining room to the living room." Good job.
New book is Whistler with a gorgeous horse on it, and it will make sense about halfway through the book. It is a wonderful novel. And Ann Patchett, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, how much I appreciate your work, and how much I love reading you and following all of your wonderful steps through this journey. I thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you for your time, Joe, and for your thoughtful reading. I really enjoyed it.
Ann Patchett is the author of the novel Whistler. It is published by Harper. Thanks so much to our producer, Madeline Reynolds. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.